Hi, welcome to the Healthful Podcast. You've got Forrest here and my good friend Monica. Tonight we're going to do an episode on biomechanics, maybe just kind of understanding biomechanics, its role in our day-to-day life, potentially some misconceptions, maybe some evidence. I don't know. We'll see where this conversation takes us, but we'll stick to the good old Healthful content, and hopefully you walk away from this learning something. So I'd like to start off with, you know, when you started your career, what did you learn about biomechanics?
We like analogies, so I'm going to use an analogy that I really liked, which is when you buy new tires and you get them, if you don't get them balanced, they start to wear on certain places of the tire. And our bodies are much like that. If we don't take care of them, we start to put wear on our muscles and bones and all the structures of our body. Then our body kind of gets used to being in that pathological position, so to speak. And so it's really important, first of all, to understand that we're all built differently, to see where our uniqueness lies and to understand that there really isn't a textbook. At the same time, we want to look at the person's gait, how they're walking, how they're standing, how their posture is. Are there muscles that are firing when they shouldn't be firing? Do they have major postural misalignments that when they are ambulatory or in movement is causing a dysfunction and causing them, ultimately it's about chronic pain and wear and tear on the body where it's not really necessary. You know, and I know that you, Forrest, have recently got into the orthotic business, so it's pretty cool to see how much you've delved into that biomechanics aspect. So what have you noticed about biomechanics since you've shifted your practice to the orthotics world?
I suppose what I've noticed most is that it can be small changes that make big impacts. And whether that we're making like positive impacts through orthotics or negative impacts through even orthotics, you know, if the orthotic doesn't fit right. But the same kind of goes with, you know, any sort of small limp. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody acquires a limp for some reason, the changes of biomechanics and how things align, how they move. Mm-hmm. So I think biomechanics are pretty important, but I also think that if we pay too much attention to the classic textbook of how biomechanics are and not about maybe the development of somebody, you know, maybe that was their development and that's how they naturally obtained those biomechanics, there's also a good possibility that they're perfectly fine with the biomechanics they have. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I kind of question myself at times whether I'm looking at a textbook and going, this needs to be this way, or maybe that's your normal and that's okay too. Totally. What's hard though, I think, is like, how do I decide which one's the dysfunctional one? Mm-hmm. And a lot of our testing procedures are sort of abstract. Like they're not super well evidence-based.
Would you say though that it comes down to our palpation skills to a certain degree? I don't know about you, but I've kind of learned when I put my hand on something, if a muscle or a tissue feels right or wrong. Obviously, if the patient's biomechanics aren't right, it's going to be reflective when we touch the patient's body.
Yeah. So that's, unfortunately, that's more... though, like if you're to take note, like at least in my profession, when you're taking notes, mm-hmm. it seems like if you're to like, you know, doing an insurance claim or, you know, you're going to go to court, mm-hmm. your palpation skills are not going to be looked at as hard evidence of what you found versus like doing some sort of special test, which is unfortunate. And I remember reading something a while back that like doctors used to touch people more. A lot of their practice, I'm guessing probably like 100 years ago, was a lot of like, let me touch, let me feel. Mm-hmm. And they used palpation skills to diagnose And then we've moved away from palpation being an art, a skillful art.
I don't know if you remember when we were in Toronto and there was that, he was a chiropractor or something, and he had someone face down on the table. I remember looking at you and we had a little light bulb go up and he told the patient, like, lift your leg, and he had his hand on the patient's glute hamstring and he was like, nope, your muscles are firing wrong, in the wrong order. And, you know, that was a moment for me where I was like, not only is he palpating, he's putting the patient into motion and feeling their muscles. And from that day, I started to implement that into my practice, and it's made a huge difference in not just like palpating the tissue, but seeing how does it feel when the patient contracts their muscle. Like, for example, as you know, I have a torn calf. So when
How'd you do in your calf?
I Forrest and I were skiing together and I hyperextended my leg and I tore my calf in the middle of a epic powder day, and we had to call it quits on the day.
Yeah,
He's a
you screwed me out of my powder day.
good friend, so he came home, he left with me and stuff, so that's great. The moral of the story is currently now, if you were to put my hand, your hand on my calf when it was relaxed, you might not pick up the pathology. It's only when I actually contract my calf and you see it pulling up, you know.
You see like a bunching of fibers.
Exactly. It looks wrong.
Has that impacted your biomechanics? Have you noticed like even a weakness or
Oh yeah. Yeah, I feel like my left leg is definitely my weaker leg in general.
Was it weaker before that injury?
Yeah, it was. I always seem to injure my left leg. I sound like a patient right now.
I know I always injure my right shoulder being a snowboarder. And the one day I separated my left AC joint and I was kind of like, oh, I'm balancing this shit out finally. Right and my left are playing equals now.
Exactly. Well, that's a good segue into compensatory patterns, how that all looks. You know, I feel like that's a really big phrase in
Compensation.
compensation. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's a thing. For sure, people will start to compensate for an injury or a limp or whatever it is. Our brains are hardwired to basically navigate away from whatever's painful, and which is good. Honestly, it's better for our healing process if we're not in pain. But then what happens after the pain goes away and the injury is healed? I bet you 9 times out of 10, most people, including myself, are not looking at getting back to the old pattern, that firing order or whatever it is that, used to be just habitual and normal. And it's really tricky, I think, when people are trying to, like, if we go back to like orthotics and looking at gait, how do you teach somebody to walk differently? There's too many inputs going on. You're like looking at birds in the sky and cars driving by and smells. You got like so many sensory inputs, yet you're also trying to like focus on your feet and how you step properly. And I don't usually try to teach people to walk differently. That's why I actually got into orthotics, is because it's a unconscious change taking place rather than trying to consciously shift something.
For sure. I'm going to ask the question that I'm sure you get asked all the time about orthotics, which is it good to create this false stability using something like orthotics? Because I hear that a lot from patients. I'll suggest them to come see you, and they'll come to me with that question. So I have my answer, but I want to hear what your answer is.
What do you mean by false stability?
Sorry, stability is the wrong word. More that the body will rely on the orthotic.
So a misconception, and I didn't know this until I started getting into it, was that orthotics, my misconception and understanding of orthotics prior to this was orthotics support your arch. And so they, if you just looked at it that way, then maybe, yeah, you're relying on an arch support, but that's actually not what orthotics are doing. They are giving you new proprioceptive feedback to strengthen your leg muscles. So that ideally, and this isn't for everybody, but ideally people could start to not wear orthotics because they've strengthened the muscles in a way that it actually supports the feet again. Because you want your feet to hit the ground a certain way. You want the certain muscles to fire at certain times to control the footfall and also to push you off. But if those things are all out of order, then orthotics are trying to get that muscular programming back into order. That's your ideal scenario. Anecdotally, since I've started doing orthotics, you know, I bought orthotics for myself and I rechecked my scan 3 months into it. My feet look the same. I checked again 6 months into it. Feet look the same. Even I was kind of like getting sort of skeptical at this point. At 9 months, my gait scan, you know, when I walk across the pad, looked way more optimal than where I started 9 months before. So that's, you know, I'm obviously not wearing orthotics to walk across that scan plate. And my arch had started to show life again, meaning like it started to rise. My metatarsals were landing in the right order, which they weren't before. I wasn't, you know, pronating the way I was before. I mean, a great question would be like, how long would that last? If I took orthotics out today and I just stopped wearing them altogether, you know, how soon would I fall into a flat foot pattern again? And I don't know. But if you looked at my left and right foot, they were different. My left foot showed a fairly optimal pattern. My right foot was lying hit and flat. So which, I mean, you could say that like maybe my right foot just got sloppy the last, like, you know, I don't know, 30 years, and now it's more optimal. And that could be my own little anecdotal challenge to myself, is like pull the orthotics. I'd probably want to change my footwear altogether, because, you know, footwear makes a big difference. It's not just orthotics. I think there's a lot of factors, and this is looking at, you know, we talk like a structural dysfunction or a functional dysfunction. But the biomechanics, you know, if you have poor biomechanics in your feet, you're going to have that impact on your knees, your hips, your low back. And so I would say, like, you know, if I'm selling orthotics right now, if you have persistent low back pain and you've been to tons of therapists and you've been working on this and you can't seem to fix your low back pain, maybe go check to see a podiatrist or somebody who does orthotics and see if that's part of the equation. It might not be the only part, but it might be part of it.
Absolutely. And what comes to mind for me too is, my response is sometimes, if you had low back pain before you got orthotics and it went away, so what if you have to wear orthotics for the rest of your life? If it's helping you function better, helping your biomechanics, then that's okay. For example, I have some patients who have pretty serious like AC joint tears, and they have to keep their shoulder taped when they do extreme sports, right? That to me is a pretty small price to pay to be able to continue to do the things that you love. And sometimes when we've abused our body to a certain degree, we do need to take those precautions. So I think it is like, that's an interesting perspective that you have with the orthotics. And it's definitely, I put the question back to the patient, like, why would that be so bad to have to wear orthotics?
Because they're expensive. I think that's what keeps people, you know, not interested. Usually the cost of an orthotic usually kind of persuades people, like, I don't know if I can afford this. But I got to say, like, people don't honestly think about orthotics unless somebody told them to it. It's not like, you know, the lay person walking down the street with low back pain is like, maybe it's my feet. You know, they need to kind of be informed, because I've tried advertising for this and I don't know, maybe my advertising is pretty poor on selling orthotics, but the people who are looking for orthotics usually got told by somebody else they should look for some orthotics.
And I think that there is a misconception about the difference between a footbed and an orthotic, because I've had patients for a long time and I had asked them, do you have an orthotic? And then I've been out in the hallway with them and I'm like, oh, let's see your orthotic. And I'm like, that's not an orthotic, that's a footbed.
Prefabricated.
Exactly. Yeah. And And then I have to explain to them, no, this is a completely different thing. An orthotic is made specifically for your foot. And I explain what you do with the gait analysis and walking over the pad, and it scans your feet and all the good stuff. And people are like, oh, I didn't know that. So I do think you're right that it is like an educational piece.
It's educational. I don't know. Do you wear, well, I know what you wear, but like, probably.
It's okay. There's no patient confidentiality here.
Yeah. Like prior to me making your orthotic, so what were you wearing?
I did have these, what are they called? Smart feet. So you go into like a ski shop and they do scan your feet, but it's not a gait-based scan. So they would scan you just standing, right? Whereas the scans that you did, by the way, Forrest did my footbeds in there.
If you haven't picked up on that yet.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was just a different diagnostic process as well, where you first assessed my posture. There was an intake. I walked across a pad. It felt very professional, you know, as opposed to just going into a ski shop and standing on the thing and having your orthotics spat out of a machine. So yeah, I think it was definitely a different experience. I think it was better than like the, you know, buy them off the shelf footbed for sure.
Well, and the prefabricated ones, I mean, they're great if you are, say, a pronator. But what type of pronator are you, and how bad is it? And are you the same left and right? And I didn't know this, again, like I always wore like super feet. And then I got orthotics and I put them in. I was like, oh, these feel different. Like these feel like where I should be stepping. Whereas the super feet felt like the arch was a little off of where I wanted to be. I still recommend sometimes for people to, you know, I think you'd be a good person just to get super feet. I don't think you actually need orthotics. Like, I'm not in it to just sell orthotics to everybody. I think it's like anything, like it's individual. And what about textbooks and biomechanics in that, like looking at like the SI joints and the hips? And, you know, in textbooks, we want everything to be all square and alignment and perfect. And what have you noticed over the years about, you know, trying to get alignment in the pelvis?
I have noticed that leg length discrepancy is so common. Someone could have been born with that issue, whether it's structural or functional.
Structural being like, you know, they actually have a longer femur on one side than the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. So yeah, if you were to take like a measuring tape and measure from the greater trochanter down to the ankle, you would get a number and you would do it on the other side. And so you're actually getting a value there, number value. Whereas when it's more of a functional problem, we're talking about muscles pulling things out of alignment. And I feel like a lot of people have functional leg length discrepancies. In my experience, someone could have biomechanics since they were born, and maybe they've lasted 60 or 70 years just fine and they haven't experienced chronic pain. But I do think that biomechanic will set them up for a propensity toward lower back pain or toward issues with their pelvis. Because I think in old age is really when those biomechanic things start to show up, if that makes sense. Like someone could maybe not stand as straight as the textbooks say, and maybe it doesn't bother them for the first 70 years of their life. But I do think that eventually, if the skeletal system is not in alignment, at some point, the muscles and all the tissues that are supporting are going to have a hard time.
Yeah. When you're treating something, are you more concerned about getting alignment or mobility?
Definitely mobility, 100%. Yeah. Mobility and muscle and tissue plumpness. That's my favorite term. It's so funny, and I tell people that. I'm like, do you want to be like a raisin or do you want to be like a plump grape?
Do you want to be beef jerky? Or a nice plump sausage.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite word in clinic is plump. If I can get the patient mobile and plump, it's great. Because you can feel the blood flow under your fingers. So 100%, that's what I'm looking for.
Rather than, like, if you're, again, like, looking at pelvic alignments and you're mm-hmm. looking at the different bony structures right and left, and you're like, oh, man, this thing's rotated over here and this one's rotated that way. Like, how do I get these things straightened back out again? You're not too concerned about that. You're like, let me get mobility back in this joint so it moves, and I want to feel plumpness in the tissue around it, and we're good.
I actually find it super fun to evaluate someone just by diagnostic testing and to guess where I'm going to feel the restrictions and the tightness before I've put my hands on them. And I've become very good at saying, like, okay, the pelvis is like this. I'm going to expect to feel some tightness in the right QL. And then I'll go to that spot and I'll be like, ah, good. I was correct, right? So once you start to practice for a long time, I don't know if you've experienced the same thing, but you know, now when somebody walks into the clinic, I'm basically diagnosing them from the second I watch them walk into my office. Yeah. I think that's a really important moment.
Well, they know they're not being watched yet.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. They're not trying to hide from you quite yet. Yeah. Here, please stand in front of me in your natural posture. They're like, they're trying to find, like, what's going to be all straightened and aligned, whereas when they're like getting up from the chair and walking, like, they show you what's really going on.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you do that? Do you kind of guess where you're going to feel the tension before?
I sometimes anticipate where I'm going to find it. And then every once in a while I get caught off guard and I'll like go to palpate somebody's glutes and I'm like, oh shit, those aren't hard like a rock like I expected them to be. What's going on here?
Well, people are, my other favorite word, interesting. Everyone's just so different, and it's hard to, yeah, like you said, have that textbook quality where it's not always 100% predictable. Yeah. Even for us who like have a lot of clinical experience, and I try to watch people, like I said, from the second they walk in and how their posture is and stuff, and still I'm caught off guard like you are as well.
I don't know if this is wrong or not, but I've started teaching about just getting mobility back. So, you know, if we're talking about, again, like pelvis is a great place to like talk about alignment stuff, because you can see like one side of the pelvis is rotated forward and one side's rotated backwards. And most of the books I've read and all the courses I've taken is about like, if you're rotated forward on this side, you do X, Y, Z to get it to rotate back. And it's about like, you know, all these corrective alignment bits. Mm-hmm. And I've been using those for years and years, and it works. A lot of them work. I can kind of get things straightened back out again. But what I've started, I think, notice the last couple of years is I care a lot less about alignment and I'm looking for mobility. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like, and I'll just start employing different techniques and different ideas, and then I'll recheck alignment and I'm like, oh, look at that, it's aligned again, and I didn't have to do like this specific, you know, contract, relax, muscle energy technique to get that. Yeah. Which makes me start to question like everything I've read. It's like, yeah, why is everything so specific? Like, you can only do it this way to get this.
Yeah.
And so I've been teaching students, like, I don't care, like, if they're anteriorly, you're asking me if they're anteriorly rotated, how do you correct that? I'm like, I don't care. They don't care how you correct it. Mm-hmm. Because your job is just to get that thing moving again.
Absolutely.
However you want to do it. And hey, if your first technique doesn't get it moving, try something else.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot more fun to teach that way. Mm-hmm. And also less, I don't know what's the word, kind of like when you're like staring down at somebody's pelvis and you're like, oh, is that anteriorly rotated? Is that what? And you're like, no, it's just stuck. Let's get it moving. How do I get this thing moving? Well, I've got 10 different ways. Let's try what I think might work best today on this one. Mm-hmm. That's why I was curious if you ever pay more attention to alignment or
mobility.
Well, I think mobility is way more important, especially when we're talking about something like the pelvis, because it's the key to a healthy gait, which we do a lot of walking as humans. Yeah. We spend a lot of time on our feet. And what a lot of people don't know is that there's several phases to a gait. And each of those different phases, if you break them down, require contractions and relaxation of certain muscles. So if you don't have the range of motion in your hips or your quads or your hamstrings or your calves to perform a normal gait, you're in big trouble. And it doesn't matter how your hips are rotated. That's not the concern. The concern is, are your muscles able to contract and relax during that gait process and during your biomechanical movements properly? And the only way that they can do that is if they have adequate range of motion.
Because like if your hip comes to its end range too soon, you're gonna have to get that movement somewhere else.
Exactly.
You're gonna swing your body one way or the other. You're gonna lift your, bend your knee more. You're gonna do some sort of compensation to accomplish that task. And then you just repeat that over and over again, and things start to get pretty screwy.
Yeah, that's totally it.